bienvenue donc pour cette séance de cet après-midi. Maybe I will speak in French and we'll see which language will be better for discussion. Donc cet après-midi, deux communications qui sont celles de Abdoulaye Gueye, organisateur de ce colloque transnational entre Paris et Ottawa pour sa seconde phase, et Crystal Phoenix, que je suis très contente de retrouver, de Stony Brook University. Alors, Johan me précisait qu'après la première communication, nous ferions une pause de 10 minutes. Et ensuite, après la deuxième communication, discussion ouverte avec une heure butoir peut-être, qui est celle de 18h, 18h30. Voilà, ce qui va nous laisser du temps pour discuter.
Alors, ce matin, on faisait une communication suivie d'une discussion. Ensuite la pause, et ensuite deuxième communication suivie d'une discussion. Le risque étant, après c'est toi qui décide,
oui.
Donc c'est toi qui décide, qu'on oublie parfois la première communication. Donc voilà.
Très bien.
Je vais ce matin.
D'accord. Effectivement, donc on peut faire des questions tout de suite après les communications, et peut-être une discussion plus large ensuite.
Oui.
Ouais,
oui.
Plus ouverte peut-être
c'est
sur la journée.
C'est possible. Enfin,
c'est une proposition, à vrai dire. Voyons comment les choses se déroulent. Donc, ce sont des communications de 20 minutes, Johan, n'est-ce pas ?
40.
Bon. Alors, vous voyez que j'avais besoin de précision. Et j'ai créé le trouble immédiatement. Donc, 40 minutes. Bon, donc je donne la parole à Abdoulaye Gueye, School of Sociological and Anthropological Studies de l'Université d'Ottawa, sur une communication intitulée Variation on the Memory of Slavery Lessons from Black French Activists. Thank you.
Bah, merci beaucoup. Je vais commencer par remercier tout le monde d'avoir été présent. Malheureusement, puisque j'avais déjà écrit ma communication en anglais, je ne peux pas improviser en français, donc je vais la donner en anglais, mais soyez à l'aise pour poser vos questions en français et je répondrai bien évidemment en français. Donc le titre de la communication, c'est Variation on the Memory of Slavery, Lessons from Black French Activists. I would like to open my communication by quoting Du Bois, and especially a very powerful statement made by Du Bois about 100 years ago. In this statement, Du Bois wrote simply that the problem of the 20th century is the problem of the color line. And I wanted to turn, you know, to twist this sentence and say that maybe in the French context, we could say that the issue of turn of 20th century in France seems to be the inclusion of slavery in the national narrative. And there are several evidences to this statement. The very first one is that parallel to the historical march for the dignity of enslaved Africans that was held on May 23rd, 1998, many other events followed later that confirm the pervasive presence of the specter of slavery in the French context. There has been, of course, as we all know, the recognition of Christian Taubira's law that recognized, of course, slavery as a crime against humanity. There has been also a process of institutionalization of the commemoration of slavery through the recent inauguration of the famous ACT Memorial by President François Hollande in Guadeloupe. But although slavery is becoming a real issue in the French context, for many, many years, in the national mainstream media in particular, the question that has extensively reported was the divisive aspect and the controversial aspect of the memory of slave trade. The proof of that is the famous Rapport Caspi, the Caspi Report, published, I think, 4 or 5 years ago, about, you know, the numbers of events that have been commemorated in France. And What comes out this report is that there is an inflation of commemoration in the French context. But the interesting part is that the writer of the report realized this inflation of commemoration only after the Taubira Law passed, and not before the Taubira Law passed, which actually led Christian Taubira to criticize, of course, the report by saying that, quite interestingly, apparently there are some events that deserve recognition and commemoration, and other events that pretty much did not deserve recognition and commemoration. So this is the point of departure of my communication. What I wanted to highlight here is the fact that people in all the world, academics, scholars, but also journalists, have paid a quite amount of time discussing the divisive aspect of the commemoration of slavery, but along racial lines. And I would like to ask the question about what about the divisive aspect of the commemoration of slavery within the black activism itself? Because we assume that all members of the African descent in France, I mean, have a same comprehension, a same approach, a same understanding of how the slavery has to be commemorated and what should be the strategy of the commemoration of the slave trade. And as I hope to demonstrate throughout this presentation, actually, there's nothing like a common understanding of the commemoration of the slave trade. What I call an autonomous black commemorative entrepreneurship was launched in 1998, that is the year of the celebration of the 150th anniversary of what we call the second abolition of slavery on French soil. We have to understand the commemoration of slavery in 1998 by putting it into perspective, because actually what happened is that this commemoration occurred in a national and international context that was highly favorable to its success. Let us look at the French context, for instance. There were two sets of facts that were very instrumental. First, there was, in the 1990s, the socio-political climate of redrawing the boundaries of French identity through the severe restriction of the access to French citizenship. And this redrawing of the French boundary has affected mostly people of African descent or of Arab descent through, you know, the French citizenry routine acknowledgement of their racism in successive polls and survey. In February 1997, a poll showed that 52% of the French citizens acknowledged that they were openly racist. And of course, by saying they were openly racist, the idea that was conveyed was that actually to be French, the idea that was expressed was that actually in the notion of Frenchness was excluded some groups, and namely people of African descent and people of Arab descent. The second set of fact is that in the 1990s and early 2000 period, there was a series of commemorative decisions benefiting other ethnic communities. There were, of course, the Jewish minority obtained from the state recognition of the Jewish Holocaust, which was translated in the 1999 Gaysu Law that punished anyone convicted of denial of the Holocaust. Then in President Chirac 1995, unprecedented speech that established France's responsibility in the deportation of Jews. And the second element is what we call the recognition of the Armenian genocide by the French government. I mean, the genocide perpetrated by the Turkish government against the Armenian genocide. And in the same breath, if you look at the international level, just few years, less than a decade before exactly a decade before the celebration of the 150th anniversary of slavery in France, we know that Brazil in 1988 celebrated the 100th 50th anniversary of the abolition of slavery. And the important part here is to link Brazil to France, because something that few people know about Christian Taubira, who was, as we all know, the artisan of the law recognizing slavery as a crime against humanity in France, is that Christian Taubira was the vice president of the friendship group France-Brazil at the French Assembly. So we could hypothesize that she was very well aware of what was happening in Brazil in 1988, and which, as I would like to hypothesize, maybe inspired her also to work on French context in order to have the slave trade acknowledged. And finally, UNESCO famous 1994 Slave Road Project. And this also would inspire not only some African countries, but it would also inspire, as I hope to show here, some people who would become prominent activists on French context, such as the founder of COFAD here in Paris. So Black commemorative entrepreneurship would consist of a heterogeneous body of narratives and actions, including the abolition of slavery, the introduction of Pope Nicholas V's bull authorizing the purchase and transplantation of people of African descent, the organization of the Berlin Conference legalizing the colonization and the distribution of the African continent between European military powers, and finally, the contribution of the famous Tirailleurs Sénégalais to the liberation of Europe from the Nazi grip. So all these events are celebrated and commemorated within the Black activists. But what is interesting is that the one that seems to be the more federative event is, of course, the commemoration of slavery here in the French context. And here I would be concerned with analyzing Black French initiatives for the remembrance of slavery exclusively. I will not take into consideration the commemoration of the famous event that we call the massacre of the Tirailleurs Sénégalais and other things. So among all the aforementioned commemorative event, that of slavery clearly stands out as the most public, the most visible, and the most enduring example of commemoration. Its salience and duration make it perhaps the commemorated event crystallizing at the utmost degree the differences and similarities of view and uses of the citizenry of African descent's past. The memory of slavery happens thus to be an ideal unit analysis to study the dynamic of collective memory within the Black French segment. What has been the result of the commemoration of slavery? One of the first arguments I would like to discuss here is that commemoration of slavery has enabled the making of a Black agency in the legislative sphere. The French Assembly, as we all know, has become the quasi-permanent home to a small proportion of Black lawmakers, most of them hailing from the Caribbean territories. And in general, Black representative influence within the French Assembly is barely noticeable due to the relatively small size of this group. If influence is gauged in terms of ability to successfully design, submit, and carry forward a bill, we could say that Black legislators could be discounted easily in the French context. However, the interesting part is that the issue of the memory of slavery has enabled an unprecedented agency of and a degree of unity between Black lawmakers at the French Assembly. Indeed, after the silent march in 1998, Christian Taubira, who is, as we know, the elected MP of the first district of French Guiana, proposed in 1999 a law to demand that the French government officially give recognition to the slavery past. And what is interesting is to see the work that Christian Taubira has done at the level of the French Parliament in order to bring together all the Black MPs and some non-Black MPs in order to have this bill voted and to have it passed. Among the black at that time, there was only one who happened to not be of Caribbean descent, but black, that was Kofi Yamnyan. So Kofi Yamnyan and the rest of the black MPs supported duly the law and finally made it possible to pass. Just to give an example, during the general discussion of the law at the first parliamentary session, that was on February 18, 1999, six out of the nine deputies who registered to address the parliament were of African descent. And moreover, a clear expression of common concern among these national representatives is also apparent in the discussion during that session. In their respective speeches, each of them compelled the Republic to acknowledge its historical wrongdoing and responsibility in the enslavement of people of African descent. So clearly what happened was a unitary black voice emerged during that session when it was time to discuss the issue of recognition of slavery by the French state. And such prominence of black lawmakers was confirmed through the identities of the members of the committee that President Chirac would consult and eventually appoint in order to suggest a commemorative date. As we know, Guadeloupe novelist and emeritus professor at Columbia University at that time, Maris Condé, headed the committee, and late Edouard Glissant, who Jacques Chirac entrusted with delineating the shape and content of a National Center for Research on the Atlantic Trade, Slavery, and Abolition, is also of Caribbean descent and therefore assimilated with the black group. So this center, as we all know, would serve as an institutional repository for the memory of slavery in mainland France. So this presidential choice, that is Chirac's choices, are of some significant interest. First of all, they certify to a certain extent the empowering potential of the collective memory of slavery. Power is to be understood here as an act of directing individual or collective actions and thoughts, and therefore of shaping destinies. Through this act of leadership, an old habit has been disrupted, if not a new ground broken in post-colonial France. It is the recognition of the ability of people of African descent to provide expertise on issues pertaining to the life and experience of the entire black population, even on French soil. Beyond its contribution to the cohesiveness of black voices and the formation of the black agency, the issue of the commemoration of slavery has ontological functions for black mnemonic entrepreneurs. The very first function is, I argue, recovering the humanity of blacks. For black entrepreneur, of course, recognizing slavery and celebrating slavery is intended to give black people the humanity that they have lost during this tragedy. So let me try to explain briefly why this idea of lost humanity and how do I theorize it here. I would like to start with an excerpt of a book manifesto that was published by an organization named Diversité in Bordeaux, Christian knows, and the book was written by commissioned by Diversité to Patricien Cavallès, and the opening of the book consists in a quote that we owe to Edouard Glissant, Wallace Soyinka, and Patrick Chamoiseau, the three of them well-known writers of the black diaspora. And what they assert is that the participation of black as well as any other group in Le Tout Monde, Edouard Glissant's famous concept Tout Monde, supposes that the untold parts of the history of any people must be included in the history of civilization. So what is the origin of this statement? The origin of this statement, we can find it clearly suggested in Césaire's. Césaire's make a clear connection between humanity and civilization, and in so doing argue that black have been excluded from the discourse on civilization in order to justify their servitude, their enslavement. So, in light of this statement, we can simply argue that the retrieval or the recovery of their humanity by black people would hinge upon their inclusion. A major concern of black activists then would be to recover the humanity of blacks. Because we have to keep in mind the idea that in their discourse, the 150 years long burial of the memory of the slave trade is synonymous in most discourse with the reclaiming of the human quality of blacks. In other words, for 150 years after the emancipation, while black were not recognized as humans, part and parcel of the humanity. This morning, when Anna Lucia was presenting, at some point she was telling us about a coast named Porto de Galinhas, and it is quite interesting because with several different interpretation of the origin of this concept Porto de Galinhas, which is the port of chicken port or port of chicken etc. And the thing here is simply the fact that by using Galinhas, we don't know if it was as Anna Lucia was suggesting, either because people were associating blacks with chicken, or because they were using these chickens in order to hide, the illegal slave trade that was happening after the abolition. The very fact is that, there is a blacks and the chickens, or the animals, have been put on the same level. So, which is a way to suggest that black have been cast out of humanity and turned into animal, into object, into whatever you want, but anything but simply human beings. And so for all these period of time when they were slaves, they had lost the status of human. And we can see clearly that in most of these activist discourses and practices, one of the main concerns is to tell that we have to recover our humanity. And the mechanism of depriving blacks of freedom as a mechanism, the Côte Noire turned them into the category of slave, that is basically someone who is not, that's Fukuyama's quote, someone who is not acknowledged as a human being in any way whatsoever, and whose access to humanity would then depend on the same act of battle that would need to be to be turned at his advantage. So what Fukuyama is trying to tell us here, and in order to help us, I use Fukuyama here in order to understand the very process of recovering the humanity of black, is the fact that simply, in order to become human again, black must wage a war or a battle. And this battle in a civilized society will no longer take place in a war zone. It takes place in a democratic parliament. So that's why the parliament becomes the place where people have to fight, or black people in particular have to fight in order to recover their humanity. The logic in play here in this argument is also that the discourse of black mnemonic entrepreneurs and the Tobiro Law are also to be understood in the light of the relationship between memory and humanity. First and foremost, memory is by definition a distinctive characteristic and evidence of humanity. Animals don't have memory. Human beings constitute the only species with such a skill to create memory. So by memorializing the slave trade, blacks would put themselves back into the status or the quality of human. So to recollect the past and assign it a contextual meaning is a fundamental attribute of a reason-driven being. Therefore, that is a prerogative of human species. The commemorative struggle undertaken by blacks becomes necessarily, if not logically, a process by which they intend to demonstrate their full participation in the human species. Commemoration is also, in addition to recovering the humanity of blacks, it is also a way to bring blacks back into Frenchness. That is, make them again part and parcel of the French nation. I'll try to explain that. Commemoration appears, as I said, with the simple goal of enforcing the acknowledgement of black full membership in the French nation. I want to take a quote from one of the former president and founder of CRON, Patrick Lozès, in his book. Lozès writes this: "If I may outline the quote, the history of colonization and slavery, as the CRON would like to see them studied in textbooks. The issue is not about rewriting history, but it's about returning impartially to this event and reminding people, numbers, fact that overly selective memory of our country is inclined to forget. It's about examining the fact and giving them the significance they deserve, no more, no less, so as to tend with the bottomless well of integration, and so as for the black of France can at long last become full citizen. In other words, we want to memorialize the slave trade in order to make black people full citizen of the French nation." So in these lines, what is echoed in these lines is that for black activists involved in the making of a memory of slave trade, making black citizen on the basis of a truncated vision of their past would simply prevent them from accessing to French citizenship. There is a need to rewrite the history of France and include into this history the slave trade in order to have black recognized as part and parcel of the French society. So these are the two main functions of the commemoration of slavery, as I wanted to show. That is, on the one hand, recovering blacks with their humanity, and on the other hand, reclaiming the Frenchness of their of the black people. Now, of course, although the black mnemonic entrepreneur that I was talking about, that is, those black activists, all agree on these goals, one thing that we realize when we look carefully at the various struggles and action undertaken within the black group is the fact that there is one tragedy, but there are diverse commemorations. The tragedy is the same, it is slavery, but the way in which black French commemorate slavery and the strategies that they use are not the same. So that is the last part that I want to present and with you try to understand why things are not why things are this way. In other words, why blacks don't have the same idea, the same strategy when it comes to the commemoration of the slave trade. Commemoration of the slave trade is of course a collective dynamic, and a collective dynamic does only imply a conglomerate of people in search of their own betterment. But a collective dynamic is also a crucible of competing ideas, ambitions, ethical principle, and ideology. Coordination and management of a collective dynamic implies the emergence of a leadership for sustainability purpose. But as leadership is vested with the function of arbitrage, it also fuels conflict. For leadership is in many cases the object of competition as a result of the exceptionalism or the superiority that it theoretically is associated with. Not to mention the access to symbolic resources, that is visibility, authority, even power that leadership implies. So leadership encompasses two major stakes that potentially conceal the risk of conflict. There is what I call the when stake and the how stake. The when stake, that is when do we have to do things, and the how stake is how do we have to do things. The when stake refers mainly to timeline, and the how stake refers mainly to method and strategy. So now let us see how the when stakes as well as the how stake becomes contentious issues within the black activists. With regard to the Wednesday, we remember that, you know, when after the commemoration of the 150th anniversary of slavery and the recognition of slavery as a crime against humanity, the first issue that came to mind was President Chirac's decision to announce an official date for the commemoration of slavery. So the choice of this date is, in the theoretical framework I have here, is a matter of Wednesday. And this choice of the official date prompted the expression of a binary fracture of black activism. Separately, Cran, Coffard, Collective Égalité, etc., etc., backed Christian Taubira and the committee's suggestion to have May 10th as the date for the commemoration of the slave trade. But on the other hand, as we all know, the same 98 refused to acknowledge the legitimacy of May 10th and decide instead that May 23rd should be the time and the best date for the commemoration of the slave trade. So now, in some parts of the literature, there has been an attempt to make sense of this division, of this divergence. One of the main arguments that we find in the literature is that, well, there is this division or there is this divergence because of ethnic territorial origin. In other words, through this division, we find the classical pattern Africans against Caribbeans. So Africans are rather in favor of May 10th, and Caribbeans are rather in favor of May 23rd. But I find that this argument is a little bit simplistic as an account of the opposition. Of course, we all know that there has been and there still will be a division within the black activism between Caribbeans and Africans, in the same way that even in the Parti Socialiste, we would always have the division between the pro-Martine Aubry and the pro-Hollande, etc., etc. But I don't think that it is enough to understand what is happening here with regard to the Wednesday. To be sure, the competition between the two subgroups is not fictional. But the thing that we notice is that the division among Antillean themselves, as show Giroux and Constant, not to mention the one between Africans, as show some research, including mine, are not less nefarious. The organization in favor of May 10 are not strictly association of black Africans, nor are all prominent activists subscribing to May 10th. The Metropolitan Chapter of the Mouvement International pour les Réparations, an organization founded in the Antilles by Garcin Massa, an ecologist and pro-independentist, and currently mayor of Saint-Anne in Martinique, is composed of both Antillean and Africans. Coffard's second prominent leader, Joby Valente, is of Antillean origin. And Claude Sillard, who also, of course, were one of the people who supported May 10th and one of the most popular black figures in the Caribbean population today, is also of Antillean descent. So to come to terms with the complexity of this division among activists with regard to the commemoration of slavery, we need to bring to the fore all the explanations. And one key for me is undoubtedly ideological orientation. Beyond the African-Caribbean dichotomy, the black operated organization differentiated along ideological conception of memorialization. There are, according to me, three ideological conceptions of memorialization in particular that compete. There is one that I call, referring, by the way, to Johann Michel's work, the victim-based conception of commemoration. A second one that I call the institution-based conception, and finally, the race-based conception. So the date of commemoration ought to be chosen according to the historical record of actions undertaken by the victims. That's what the victims-based commemoration try to suggest. And the goal is to highlight the actions of those who are victims instead of highlighting the action of an institution. So in other words, we pay tribute to the victims and not to, and the agents in particular of the victims and not to the state. That's why those who have chosen May 23rd insist on the fact that it is our enslaved ancestor that we are commemorating and not any other individual or any other institutions. But of course, as we know, through the choice of May 23rd, which assumes to celebrate the victims of the slave trade, we know that actually the choice of May 23rd is a sort of a synecdoche, because of course May 23rd belongs to a specific geographic entity, because it's not on May 23rd that all territories in the Caribbean actually, I mean the slaves in all territories in the Caribbean decide to rebel and claim their emancipation. The institution-based conception proposed to be more inclusive than the victim-based, which it accused, by the way, of being parochial. It implies that the commemoration of the abolition must be a moment of communion of the entire nation, regardless of citizens' ancestry and history. The state as an institution is viewed as the most legitimate and efficient entity to ensure this communion. And finally, the race-based conception is most explicitly expressed within COFAD, an organization composed of radical Pan-Africanists. This conception concurs with the institution based on the calendar of commemoration. However, they diverge radically in terms of approach. The former conceive of commemoration as the rehabilitation of the black folk to whom was denied humanity through enslavement. And contrary to the previous, it insists strongly on the no-debated racial dichotomy between victims, that is blacks, and culprits, that is the white. Hence its fight for reparation, which it was the only organization to promote until recently, that is 2012-2013, when Cron also decided to go in the same direction. So due to the different understanding of the rationale of commemoration, whether this must be intended to highlight the triumph of justice and the reparation of a prejudice, the agency of a group, or simply the unity of a racial or national group by the different organizations, the black movement is unfolding asunder, since the official establishment of a national commemoration day. Organizations invested in the memorialization of the slave trade and slavery had been unable to come together on the same day to mark publicly and collectively the abolition of slavery. So let me move quickly to the house take, because I don't have much time. So the house take is, how do we have to celebrate or to commemorate slavery? We know that there has been an official benediction, to speak in this way, of the French state with regard to slavery, that is acknowledging that slavery is a crime against humanity. But the realization of this goal begets another stake that impede the unification of the black movement. This is the house stake, the famous strategy. It consists on determining the most legitimate way to commemorate. So organizations diverge in this regard. Let me just take a few examples. When the 10th anniversary of the Taubira Law was meant to be celebrated, marked, the Crown decided to lobby, at that time Dominique Villepin was Prime Minister, to lobby the cabinet of Dominique Villepin, raise funds, money, in order to organize a big event that would contribute to the celebration. So what happened is that quickly, when members of SEM 98 heard about this event, they lashed against Crown by saying that Crown is desecrating the memory of slavery by organizing a Zouk party. Because there was a concert planned as part of the commemoration. And then for them, the commemoration should be a spiritual activity, praying for the for the enslaved ancestors, etc. But what is interesting here with regard to the whole stake, that is how to celebrate the commemoration, is the fact that in the light of this criticism, Sam Katradizit was trying to explain that music should not be part of the commemoration because music is a form of desecrating the memory of the slavery. But what is interesting is that, I mean, whenever you go to attend a 23rd of May at Collective Sam Katradizit, there's always music. And the other thing is that Zouk. Exactly. So the other thing is also the fact that what they were trying to convey here is the fact that the ancestors must be worshipped, and this is anti-African to say it in this way, to have music in order to celebrate the dead people. But anthropological and ethnological research have shown clearly that music is at the heart of how people in African, traditional African societies, how people, pay tribute to the dead, etc., etc. So what is happening here is simply, that's what I would like to say briefly before stopping, is that actually what we're seeing in here in this divergence of position, in this competition, is a struggle for power. Because as I said in my introduction, since the recognition of slavery as something central in the national narrative, we know that those who could embody the memory of slavery or the right to memorialize slavery as clearly, directly or indirectly, explicitly or implicitly, they are vested with power, the power to speak in the name of an entire group. So Crown would try to discredit Sam Katradizit would try to discredit Crown just because, of course, there is power at stake. So that's where I wanted to stop because I run out of time. Thank you for your attention.
No, it was perfect time. Thank you. Thank you so much. So may we open the floor to questions? Yes, please.
Merci. Moi, je te pose la question en français pour.
Oui, bien sûr. Pour ton intervention qui dresse un peu un état des lieux des controverses, des conflits, des oppositions entre un certain nombre d'entrepreneurs de mémoire de l'esclavage. Alors, je voulais te poser la question suite à une discussion qu'on a depuis longtemps, qu'on a eu encore hier soir, sur un certain nombre d'expressions que tu emploies. Surtout dans le contexte de 1998, d'entrepreneurs noirs ou d'activistes noirs. Alors, c'est peut-être une catégorie que tu peux objectiver, toi, en tant que chercheur, mais ce qui ressort en tout cas, par exemple, des débats parlementaires au cours du vote de la loi Taubira, c'est que les élus ultramarins qui ont pris la parole pour défendre cette loi à aucun moment ne se sont identifiés ou auto-identifiés ou présentés comme noirs, comme guadeloupéens, comme nationalistes, comme communistes, indépendantistes, mais jamais comme noirs. Bon. À l'époque, en 98, il n'y avait guère que le COFAD, à la rigueur, qui pouvait avoir, un discours racial. Et en aucun cas, bien évidemment, les membres de SEM 98, et c'est surtout avec l'arrivée du CRAN où cette question-là est devenue, extrêmement sensible. Donc c'est cette fameuse expression d'entrepreneur noir de la mémoire de l'esclavage qui peut avoir un sens pour le CRAN, par exemple, mais qui n'en a pas, en tout cas, je crois, au vu des archives sur lesquelles j'ai pu travailler, en 1998. Ou alors c'est une catégorie rétrospective, mais qui mériterait, je crois, explication. Voilà.
Ok, très bien. Est-ce que je réponds tout de suite et, ok, très bien. Oui, alors bien évidemment, comme Johan l'a dit, ça fait au moins un an et demi qu'on tourne autour de cette même question, qu'on en discute, etc. L'approche que j'ai et sur la base de laquelle j'essaie de justifier mon utilisation du mot noir pour désigner à la fois ceux qui sont du côté du cran que ceux qui sont du côté du coffard et de CM98, c'est la suivante, elle est très simple. Bon, au cran, c'est limpide. Conseil représentatif des associations noires. Le COFAD, lorsqu'on lit d'ailleurs, on constate une chose, c'est COFAD, c'est qu'il n'y a pas mot noir, il y a le mot africain, donc déporté africain. Collectif des filles et fils des déportés africains. CM98, il n'y a pas la mention noire. Et dans mes travaux, en fait, je regarde l'ensemble des organisations prominentes, si je peux dire, qui se sont constituées depuis 1998 jusqu'à maintenant. Et ce qui frappe, c'est que Collectif Égalité n'avait pas le mot noir, Collectif d'Hommes n'avait pas le mot noir, etc., etc. Donc, bien évidemment, comment expliquer ça? Capdiv non plus n'avait pas le mot noir dedans. Lorsqu'on regarde, parce que des fois, il faut aussi s'arrêter sur... Au-delà de l'objectivation que le chercheur fait, il faut aussi regarder les textes qui sont produits. Par exemple, dans les archives du CAPDIV, comme dans les archives du collectif Égalité, je suis tombé sur des passages où les gens disent clairement. Nous voulons bien évidemment parler des problèmes, de la discrimination, etc., qui frappe les populations noires, mais nous devons éviter d'utiliser ce terme parce que ça peut se retourner contre nous. Donc même, ça fait partie des stratégies. Regarde, aux États-Unis, lorsque le National Association for the Advancement of Colored People a été créé, tout le monde savait que c'était des Noirs qui étaient derrière, mais on mettait en avant des Blancs pour ne pas donner l'impression que c'est un mouvement formé par des Noirs pour lutter en faveur des intérêts des Noirs. Maintenant, je reviens sur une autre chose, toujours dans la même logique, pour justifier encore davantage pourquoi je considère, même à l'heure où je parle, que CM98 est une organisation noire, même si officiellement, ils ne le disent pas. D'une part, dans des discussions en aparté, moi, j'ai pu le constater, peut-être pas avec Serge Romana qui hésite, qui ne le dit pas nécessairement, mais les autres membres du CM98 qui le disent clairement. Mais pourquoi maintenant, je veux encore, parce que là faire un travail, j'allais dire, de sémioticien, l'expression qui est au centre de l'activité du collectif du CM98, c'est l'enmerfait, un terme entier qui renvoie l'océan à la mer et au fer. Et c'est une métaphore pour parler de la traite négrière. Et donc, et ils en usent comme étant au centre de l'identité même, non seulement des esclaves, mais aussi des collectifs égalités. Maintenant, si on fait l'historique, dans les Caraïbes, quelle est la seule... Parce que je ne suis pas en train de dire que ça n'a pas d'importance. Dans les Caraïbes, la seule population qui ait connu la traversée de l'océan, qui a été mise en fer pour avant d'aboutir dans cette zone, c'était des populations noires, donc d'origine africaine. Les Indiens qui ont connu le fameux indentured, you know, system, comment on appelle ça encore en français, voilà, ils avaient un contrat, ils étaient payés, même si ça pouvait ne pas être, ils n'étaient pas venus dans des fers, ils n'ont pas été dans des cales de bateau, etc. Donc cette métaphore, à elle seule, dit l'essentiel. Maintenant, on est dans une société où l'hégémonie culturelle du discours républicain, tout le monde le reconnaît, est tellement forte que pour pouvoir faire passer son message, surtout à l'époque où le CM98 était né, où le COFAD était né, etc., etc., il fallait aussi faire attention aux termes qu'on utilise si on voulait être entendu. Parce que tu as vu toute la polémique, même lorsque le CRAN a fait son fameux, en 2007, le CRAN a fait son fameux sondage pour déterminer le nombre de Noirs dans la population française, mais tous les élus, quasiment à l'exception de quelques rares, se sont jetés sur le CRAN pour dire que c'est inadmissible, on ne peut pas compter les Noirs dans cette société française. Donc c'est pour ça que je pense qu'en fait, il y a des indices comme ça qui nous permettent de déterminer comment ces gens-là, suivant les contextes sociaux, mais politiques, etc., s'identifient. Et une dernière anecdote que je peux apporter par rapport au collectif d'hommes aussi, qu'on considère comme étant une organisation antisémite et non pas une organisation noire. Est-ce que tu as suivi la polémique qui a opposé le collectif d'hommes à Bedos, pas Guy Bedos, mais Nicolas Bedos, le fils de son père. Quand Nicolas Bedos a fait son article dans Marianne où il racontait son séjour touristique aux Antilles et qu'il finit le truc par, parce qu'il raconte l'histoire d'un guide touristique qui à ses yeux était hyper cultivé, etc. Et puis à un moment donné, il demande mais pourquoi tu n'écris pas? Et puis le mec lui dit mais non, j'écris pas, etc. Parce que c'est plus marrant de juste constater. Et puis donc il finit l'article par enculé de nègre. Et Priva, qui est membre, secrétaire adjoint de Daniel Dallin, membre du collectif, a écrit une lettre pour, bien évidemment, s'en prendre à Nicolas Bedos. Et ce qui est marrant, c'est que Priva signe sa lettre par la négresse furieuse. Donc, elle-même, tu sais, dans un contexte comme celui-là, elle-même n'hésite pas à se définir en termes raciaux. C'est pour ça que je pense que, bien évidemment, il y a tout un jeu de miroirs qu'il faut prendre en considération. Il y a des contextes, il y a une certaine hégémonie du discours républicain et il y a des enjeux qui sont là, qui peuvent faire en sorte que si tu t'identifies comme noir, ça peut avoir des réplications négatives sur toi. Mais dans d'autres contextes où on peut le dire clairement et sans embâche, parce qu'il n'y a pas de, contraintes, ainsi de suite. Donc...
Y a-t-il d'autres questions, d'autres interventions? Oui, je vous en prie. Peut-être cette. Voilà.
Excuse-moi, Christine.
Non, vas-y. Mais
j'essaie de. Et c'est la jeune femme qui est.
Merci pour cette communication. C'était en fait deux demandes d'éclaircissement. La première, c'est par rapport à la mémoire. C'est un petit peu votre analyse anthropologique sur le fait que les leaders et les associations noires ou afrodescendantes ou originaires des Antilles ou d'Afrique investissent la mémoire, puisque pour recouvrer une humanité déniée par l'histoire de l'esclavage, c'est peut-être un petit peu moins profonde. Il y a aussi une question d'opportunité politique présente en cours. Toute la datation, tout que vous avez cité, et aussi, ma deuxième question, c'était justement sur le fait que les parlementaires noirs, s'unissent, mènent la guerre aussi, la lutte pour recouvrer cette humanité dans le Parlement, et s'unissent. Et parle quelque part à l'unisson. J'ai lu, ça remonte un petit peu loin, peut-être les météores de Christiane Taubira, et elle adresse un tableau tout à fait différent de cela, et où justement le petit l'article assez important d'ailleurs sur les réparations, selon ce qu'elle dit, a été sapé justement par les élus d'outre-mer. C'est un tableau tout à fait différent qu'elle dresse. Donc j'ai du mal justement à voir comment vous positionner par rapport à cet état des lieux qu'elle fait.
Vous avez parfaitement raison. Effectivement, Christiane Taubira le mentionne bien dans son livre Les Météores, la difficulté qu'elle a eu à faire passer cette partie de l'article qui parlait de la réparation. Maintenant, ça nous ramène un peu à mon concept de house take, c'est-à-dire quelle est la meilleure stratégie à adopter pour arriver au but? Parce que le but principal, c'était d'abord de faire reconnaître l'esclavage comme un crime contre l'humanité. Les réparations, la France a dû certainement prendre exemple sur ce qui s'est passé aux États-Unis et dans d'autres pays du monde où la question de l'esclavage s'est posée. C'est resté un point quasiment tabou dans la plupart des sociétés. Il n'y a que quelques petit groupe minuscule de militants qui continuent de parler de réparation, et tous les pays du monde font obstacle jusqu'à présent aux questions de réparation. Vous avez certainement suivi récemment la démarche de la première ministre de la Jamaïque il y a quelques jours, lorsque elle a décidé qu'elle allait mettre la question de la réparation au centre de la discussion, lorsque David Cameron se rendra en Jamaïque, et que tout de suite ça crée un froid au sein même de la classe politique jamaïcaine, parce que les gens se disent que est-ce que c'est le bon moment, etc. Est-ce que ça ne risque pas de froisser la Grande-Bretagne et donc de remettre en question même la visite de David Cameron. Donc en fait, c'est comme dans une famille, c'est-à-dire que quand on a un but à atteindre, il y a des stratégies qu'il faut discuter. Et beaucoup de ces parlementaires, en fait, savaient que la question de la réparation ne passerait pas et que ça risquerait de nuire même au projet de loi en tant que tel. Donc il fallait saper ça et puis maintenant se focaliser sur l'essentiel. Mais maintenant, comme vous le constatez, vous voyez que la question de la réparation ressurgit. Pas nécessairement au Parlement français, mais dans les milieux militants, la question de la réparation ressurgit. On ne sait pas si un jour ou l'autre, les parlementaires noirs et non noirs vont accepter de soutenir un tel projet.
Est-ce que vous me permettez d'intervenir sur ce point-là, parce que bon, ce que je voulais dire, c'est deux choses, et ça c'est important parce que c'est oublié. En fait, l'origine de la loi Taubira, c'est pas Taubira, c'est une association martiniquaise. Alors je le dis, bon, je suis martiniquaise, et j'étais vraiment très impliquée dans ça au départ. C'est l'association Au Devoir de Mémoire qui a contacté beaucoup, d'ailleurs, un certain nombre de députés ultramarins pour leur proposer de soutenir la loi. Et c'est Taubira qui va accepter, parce qu'il va y avoir des juristes, notamment de l'Université Antiguyane, qui vont lui démontrer que c'est possible de le faire et de porter la loi. Ça, je pense que c'est important, parce que à ce moment-là, Taubira, elle est pas dans la... Elle est députée, certes, mais elle n'est pas autant... Elle n'est pas ministre comme elle l'est maintenant. Et donc, il y a un rapport entre le local et le pouvoir central, là, qui se met en branle, et avec cette importance des associations locales qui vont porter... qui vont vraiment... en quelque sorte, imposer cette loi. Je pense que ça, c'est vraiment une dimension qui est extrêmement importante. L'autre chose que je voulais dire, c'est que la loi Taubira a été diversement acceptée dans l'outre-mer, et notamment par un certain nombre de députés qui ont considéré que c'était une loi qui était nulle et non avenue, qui ont pu la voter, hein, par ailleurs, hein, mais qui ont considéré que bon, elle avait pas lieu d'être. Et malheureusement, on dit souvent que la loi Taubira a été votée à l'unanimité. Certes, elle a été votée à l'unanimité au Parlement français, mais devant un Parlement qui était quasiment désert. Ouais. Voilà. Donc ça explique aussi beaucoup de choses pour la suite de l'histoire, pour l'application de la loi, pour la création du comité, et aussi pour un certain nombre de débats qui sont toujours à l'œuvre en France. Bon, je vais peut-être m'arrêter là, parce que j'avais d'autres choses à dire, mais je m'arrête peut-être là. Sur la question des réparations, je dois dire qu'au Comité national pour la mémoire et l'histoire de l'esclavage, depuis que j'ai été présidente, j'ai proposé une mission sur la question des réparations. Et le fait est qu'on n'a pas été chargé officiellement de cette mission, mais que le comité la lance cependant cette année, et que, alors, par ailleurs, puisque j'ai deux casquettes, on a obtenu un programme de recherche de l'Agence nationale de recherche sur la question des réparations, qui est un projet sur 3 ans et demi et qui est important. Voilà.
Juste une petite précision pour aller en ton sens, mais pour montrer aussi le rôle très important, 98, des élus communistes blancs.
Oui, oui, c'est...
notamment...
Tout à fait. Celui qui est décédé, là.
Pierre Serger.
Ouais.
Non, mais justement, c'était par rapport à ce que je disais. Parce que la première loi qui date de mars 1998 émane de députés communistes qui n'ont rien à voir avec les députés communistes d'outre-mer. Et qui proposent déjà une première proposition de loi sur la commémoration de l'esclavage. Et ça ne sera que la dernière proposition de loi de décembre 1998 où là, il y aura les trois députés de La Réunion et Christiane Taubira, et qui vient vraiment au bout du processus.
Et même pas, toujours par rapport à cette, enfin à la loi 81, parce qu'en fait, c'est vrai que souvent on a une courte mémoire. On pense que tout a commencé en 1998 et que après de là on est passé à la loi. Mais moi, j'ai lu dans les archives, mais des archives personnelles détenues par des militants entre eux, que déjà avec à travers le réseau de devoirs de mémoire. En 1994, à Fort-de-France, cette organisation avait organisé un grand colloque, suivi aussi d'un tribunal pour juger Christophe Colomb. Et Taubira était là-bas. Taubira était présent. C'est là. Ouais. Donc c'est un processus tellement long qui.
Oui.
Oui, voilà.
1994, oui. C'était dérivé de la question de la commémoration 1992, Christophe Colomb, Haïti et tout ça. Donc, ça, je pense qu'il y a plus à voir. La question qui sur laquelle j'étais curieuse, c'est la question du Brésil 88. Je me demande dans quelle mesure ça aurait joué un rôle. Je pense pas. Mais ça, il faudrait peut-être demander à elle, pour savoir dans quelle mesure elle était au courant de ce qui se passait.
Comme je disais dans ma présentation, c'était une hypothèse de travail. C'est-à-dire que le fait qu'à l'époque, elle était la vice-présidente de l'amitié Brésil-France et qu'en 1990, le Brésil avait déjà organisé, peut-être qu'elle a vu cet exemple-là et s'est dit on peut faire quelque chose à l'échelle de France. Mais encore une fois, ça, c'est une hypothèse qui est à vérifier.
Michael. On va te donner la parole, t'inquiète.
I want to take a detour.
Okay.
A detour, if we can. If we were to take the memory of slavery, which is the organizing thematic of the conference, and put it in larger categories, categories of the memory of colonization, the memories of empire. Would that change the terms of our discussion? And if so, how then do we think about the relationship of slavery to the formation of diasporas here in France, for example? And to the question today before the French public of immigration.
Well, that's a very good question. I mean, I will try to answer the question, although I'm not 100% sure that you will feel satisfied with my answer. I think that one of the main problems that we have witnessed in the French context, at least, is that scholars of the empire and colonization for a long time have assumed that slavery and, you know, the contribution of people of African descent in this process that we call colonization or empire have been inexistent. If you look at the work of some of the, you know, main scholars working on British Empire, French Empire, et cetera, even the archives that were available in some African countries or, you know, Caribbean countries were not looked at by these people. But everybody knows, or at least we know, both of you, that, you know, empire would have never been, or colonization would have never been, without the contribution of these people of African descent, regardless of the country we're talking about, or the continent we're talking about, America or here Europe. So I think that, and by the way, just to continue in the same line, I think that the main criticism that has been addressed to Pierre Nora after the publication of this book, Size of Memory, is linked to what I'm just saying. The fact that, you know, in how many volumes again? Five volumes, if my memory is correct? Three volumes? three volumes in which he talks about sites of memory in France, and there isn't a single entry regarding slavery. So it's this marginalization of the memory of slave trade in the history of colonization of empire that to a certain extent justify, you know, the emergence of this work that we have been doing on the memory of slavery. Now, what was the second question? Sorry, I had, did you say the contribution of people of Africa? Well, actually, this is if you read the works done by, you know, activists such as members of CROM, members of COFAD, members of CAPDIV, and even to a certain extent, the members of SEM 98 and Collective DOM, one of the basic premise of their work is the idea that the condition of people of African descent, either Caribbean or from Africa, is to be read in the light of what happened, you know, 100 or 200 or 300 years ago, that is, you know, mainly slavery. And some of them goes as far as to say that there is a continuity of the condition of people of African descent, you know, between, you know, the 18th century and today. In other words, they are still marginalized, they are still exploited, they are still discriminated, etc., on the basis of this simple, you know, this accident of history. So this is just to say that actually, see, the memory of slavery is included in the collective narrative of people of African descent. I mean, the generation that we are talking about. Sometimes you just need to listen to some rap musicians' lyrics, and you can hear this, you know, this continuity or this relationship that has been created between, you know, the past and the present. If I could extrapolate, I could even, you know, take the case, but we're not talking about slavery here, we're talking about colonization. The famous Les Indigènes de la République, this movement clearly traces back to the colonization period when the French system created the famous Indigène Accord, you know, traces the condition of people of Arab descent in contemporary France to that part of their history. So, yes, the memory of slavery is still... unfortunately or fortunately, I don't know, but very present in the narratives of people of African descent here in France.
S'il y a une question urgente, je vois que Christine, j'ai créé une frustration totale. Tu voudrais intervenir après, peut-être? Bah alors, non, je t'en prie. Non. Pas de censure.
Par rapport aux généalogies, mais ça c'est venu après que je lève la main. C'est vrai que c'est complexe cette généalogie de la loi Taubira. Alors, à la journée du 7 ou du 8 janvier, Fabienne Viala était intervenue sur ce fameux procès de Christophe Colomb, et qui est vraiment important. Et Christiane Taubira effectivement était là. Et là il y a une branche encore avant dans les racines. Où se prépare cette fameuse convergence entre les activistes et politiques qui va aller vers la loi Taubira. Et puis avant, tout le contexte autour du 22 mai aussi, qui a été très important. Quand on a ressuscité la date du 22 mai comme étant la révolution anti-esclavagiste, à la place de, donc, comme date par Aimé Césaire, hein, et puis des historiens qui ont exhumé la date du 22 mai dans toutes les années 80, qui préparent aussi ce terrain de la mémoire. Moi, je voulais revenir juste à la question de la race, très vite, parce que c'est vrai que c'est très compliqué. Moi, je suis à mi-chemin entre vous deux. Comment est-ce que, du moment que les groupes ne s'auto-désignent pas du point de vue racial, est-ce que nous, en tant que chercheurs, on a le droit d'utiliser la catégorie raciale s'ils ne s'auto-désignent pas? Sauf que on est dans un contexte d'invie. Alors, tu parles d'hégémonie républicaine, mais on est dans un contexte, alors certes d'hégémonie républicaine, mais qui invisibilise cette catégorie. Mais cette catégorie est prête à ressurgir dès qu'il y a un souci. Et ce qui est extraordinaire, c'est que la catégorie raciale a ressurgi de manière presque cathartique, on pourrait dire, au moment de la loi Taubira numéro 2, ce que j'appelle la loi numéro 2, c'est la loi du mariage pour tous, mm-hmm. où on a eu une débâcle raciste,
ah oui, raciste.
Incroyable qui montre que il y a une projection. J'ai intitulé un de mes articles « Plus républicain que la République » à propos d'Antillais militants qui se projettent dans une République qui ne devrait pas avoir de catégorie raciale. Et notre République, malheureusement, en a, mais les invisibilise. Et elles sont prêtes à ressurgir dès que se pose une question aussi cruciale qu'a été le mariage pour tous. Alors c'est nous, en tant que chercheurs, qu'est-ce qu'on fait avec ça? Comment on, puisque c'est invisibilisé politiquement, mais ça existe, est-ce qu'on l'utilise ou pas, etc. Donc c'est une question de conceptuelle ou épistémologique plutôt qui est... C'est pas vraiment une question, c'est un
peu... Oui. Non, mais qui est une question qui nous intéresse tous, effectivement, qui est cruciale. Je vous propose une pause, donc, de 10 minutes.
10 minutes, ouais.
Très bien. Et nous nous retrouvons ensuite.